This is truly disconcerting to me and my friends. This burden seems not only rationally absurd, but since I'm not a megalomaniac, it is very hard for me to shoulder, as I take no pleasure in leadership roles, preferring to teach by setting an example or by setting up new structures and letting them run themselves. But if it's fun and avoids cognitive dissonance, I'll do it, even if it's absurd. This is why I felt it necessary to compose this essay, giving my personal understanding of the nature and history of my enemy, the Blob, which has been progressively foiling almost every attempt I make to spread my message of love, logic and levity. The narrative describing what had happened around me in the universe in Australia between 1968 and 1974 is in my book, The Fun Revolution, Jack's Adventures in Ideology Land. I hope that this will help to show that I'm not insane in making this seemingly preposterous claim. Between 1968 and 1974, I was the only academic in Australia concerned enough with the welfare of students to be active in attending their meetings and speaking out clearly against the misuse of sociological theories and the increasingly violent elite of student power addicts on the campuses, strangely obsessed with occupying buildings by force. Motivated by burning resentment and with the help of negative sensationalist publicity in the mass media, and using shameless creation of fake news and skillful manipulation of bureaucratic procedures, these student power leaders went on to obtain managerial roles in the educational and political institutions in Australia. They published comments about me and the Fun Revolution in their newspapers at the time, which I preserved in my archives, had the emotional intensity of those recently made by the hysterical Blob chorus in the mass media and mass education institutions preceding and following the 2016 presidential elections in the USA. It indicated to me that I must be a very powerful wizard. I have since come across a fascinating description by Scott Adams in 2015 of what characterizes a paradigm-changing wizard when he tries to understand Donald Trump's career. The description fits me very well, as I began to affect major institutions in Western civilization at least 30 years earlier and in a much deeper way. I was prepared for emotional reaction with my instinctual creation in 1968 of university-based Fun Revolution, emphasized the importance of play, guided by logic and love. Play is only seen as important if one believes the universe is an evolving and self-organizing process with its own intentions. Most academics assume the universe is a unidimensional time machine. For them, it has over one overriding purpose, never admitted consciously, of course, is to provide economic and political power for those human beings who, having monopoly of the means of communication, can maintain and control the dysfunctional paradigm to maintain their positions in the hierarchy of status, material assets and power over others. For such people, play is a distraction from the real issues that may be tolerated as recreation to prepare us for the serious work of making and selling, despite polluting the environment to the point of destruction. Academic crucifixion and magical resurrection. At the end of 1968, to my complete surprise, and with the backing of the professorial board, my academic career was suddenly and incomprehensibly terminated by the head of the School of Sociology, who was also one of my thesis supervisors. At the time, as the official history of University of New South Wales shows, I was the most popular and most successful teacher in the sociology school. But most unfortunately for me, I was not a materialistic Marxist in favour of class war and violent revolution. My varied past career and my academic training in the history and philosophy of science, as well as my psychology and sociology, specialising in the sociology of religion, urged me to stay and fight, rather than surrender the university for unfair, rather than suing the university for unfair dismissal, as recommended by the Staff Association. I decided to resolve the conflict by wisely taking my threatened role set to a higher level. As Jesus recommends, I made a creative effort to stay on campus. Instead of accepting the economic compensation I was offered and running away, I would up the ante even further by stubbornly increasing my refinancing reform activities, which I call the Fun Revolution. There are many politically motivated versions of what happened in circulation and targeted at discrediting me and to dismiss the importance of what I believe was a seminal historical event. Early in 1969, I approached the Vice-Chancellor and is about to be appointed successor and showed them the correspondence between myself and the head of sociology at University of New South Wales, whilst I was a tenured lecturer at the University of WA. They were shocked by the promises made and then broken. They appreciated the immorality and irrationality of what had happened in my academic career, but had no authority over decisions of the professorial board. At this point, history took a strange turn. I'd come across a highly placed manager and his deputy with compassion and courageous enough to take a risk on my ability and integrity. I obtained their cooperation in creating a provocative and entirely new role set, which would enable me to remain on campus supported by a small honorarium. This would be a non-contractualized relationship based on solely on trust, involving both university and student administrations and free from control by academic staff. Both bodies had to agree to the proposal, and they did. I chose the archetypal title of wizard, currently fashionable in the youth culture. I did this for many reasons, not least to annoy those puritanical students and academics who had demonstrated their visceral hatred of fun, even though my friends and I had achieved many reforms. I was encouraged by my success with the Fun Revolution based on my synthesis of my studies of revitalization movements in pre-literate societies, the hippie phenomenon, the current unprecedented popularity of Lord of the Rings, and Beatlemania, which was turning on the global village. I seized the day to escape being crushed in the heartless, inhuman degree-awarding machine that was inhibiting learning and producing unnecessary psychological, social, and cultural stress and causing my best students to drop out. At this time, dropping out was a common phenomenon. I decided to do the opposite and to drop in. Gradually, I attempted to re-embody myself organically, not just psychologically, but socially, culturally, and even personally. I did this by learning from the hippies that were the subject of my lectures. I began gradually disembedding myself as much as possible, but not completely, from the social institutions which derived their meaning and their material support by their enmeshment in the scientific, mathematical, mechanistic paradigm created during the Enlightenment. What would happen to my consciousness if I did that? Marx himself claimed that our consciousness is determined by our socio-economic relationship and was similarly concerned with alienation. I began adjusting my set of interacting roles, while it was still possible, so that I could occupy what Victor Turner, the first significant experimental process anthropologist, refers to as a liminal role complex in the universities. I wanted to avoid cognitive dissonance and its expression in irrational hysteria.